Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now, on Last Call, Intel shares tanking, investors losing even more money. You're going to hear exclusively tonight from the CEO. 44%? A huge capital gains tax hike proposal has flown under the radar until now. The revenge of inflation. A critical report looming over the markets tomorrow. We will show you how to prepare. Disrupting defense. How billionaire Palmer Luckey just outgunned the industry's biggest player. And Luckey will be here. Plus, where the rich are investing right now. It's a place they've been burned before, but we've got exclusive new data. And the EV future, China style. A massive event underway right now in Beijing. Should Tesla be worried? We got all that and more over the hour. So as always, belly up or buckle up, because Last Call is up right now. Good evening here. Good afternoon out west. Apparently, we've got a market alert. I'm Brian Sullivan. We have all that and more coming up in the hour. But first up, all you investors out there, namaste. Breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief. Because Microsoft and Alphabet, worth a combined $5 trillion, maybe saving the day for technology and your money. That after Meta's earnings meltdown yesterday, which slammed the market today. Different story maybe on Friday, because shares of both are surging right now, pretty much on blockbuster earnings. And even if you don't own any of these stocks individually, but you do own an ETF, you probably own it, because Microsoft is in 318 ETFs, Alphabet in 243, that according to ETF.com. All right, so let's dig in. Let's start with Google's Alphabet. They just announced their first ever dividend. They're going to pay out 20 cents a share. They also announced a $70 billion stock buyback program. Alphabet's revenue bumped 15% from a year earlier, fastest rate of growth since early 2022. Now on the call, CEO Sundar Pichai emphasized the company's focus on incorporating, you guessed it, AI into search.
For nearly a year, we've been experimenting with SGE in search labs across a wide range of queries. And now we are starting to bring AI overviews to the main search results page. We are being measured in how we do this, focusing on areas where GenAI can improve the search experience while also prioritizing traffic to websites and merchants.
So that's Google. Then there's Microsoft. Total revenue there grew 17%. Sales of Azure, which is their big flagship cloud product, jumped 31%. Here's what CEO Satya Nadella had to say on the call just a short bit ago.
Our AI innovation continues to build on our strategic partnership with OpenAI. More than 65% of the Fortune 500 now use Azure OpenAI service. All up, the number of Azure AI customers continues to grow and average spend continues to increase.
All right, so those two stocks, they're up, but look at all this. And if you're on the radio, I'll just tell you what you're seeing. Amazon, Apple, NVIDIA, Meta, and Tesla, they're all higher in extended hours trading. So the AI trade, powering the markets the last 2 years, how much more could be left in that theoretical gas tank? Let's bring in Peter Diamandis. He is a famed serial tech entrepreneur, author, conference host, and all-around great guy. He's going to break down these results. He's also the founder of Abundance 360 and the XPRIZE Foundation. And with all those introductions, Peter, that's all the time we have. Thanks for coming on tonight. Okay, kidding. Listen, AI. All right. I love it. I think it's amazing. We can use it. Is the enthusiasm getting out of hand at all, or is this the real deal?
This is the real deal. You have to remember, these companies like Microsoft, right, the most valuable company in the world, used to be a software company. Then it was an internet company. Then it's a cloud company. They're all becoming AI companies. I'm clear there's two kinds of companies by 2030, those fully utilizing AI and those who are out of business. It's going to be that fundamental. And when you look at these companies, Brian, it's a question of, do they have what it takes to really succeed? Do they have the team? Do they have access to the data? Really, where's the data coming from to train these AI models? Do they have the compute, or these massive H100 and soon H200 clusters? And then do they have the output deals? Do they have the means to take AI and generate revenue with it? And we've got these $6 trillion companies, in the form of Microsoft and Google and Meta and Amazon through Anthropic. And of course, Elon with X.AI, which is coming on strong through Tesla and through X. And these companies are playing full out. AI is their future.
Do you worry at all that the big are getting too big, that these couple of lions are eating everybody else and they're chasing off all the other lions who then just don't get to eat? You know what I'm saying? These, you mentioned it, $6-7 trillion, Peter. Is there any concern in that big brain of yours that it's getting a little too concentrated at the top?
We're going to see these large players continue to survive and thrive. There are new breakthroughs coming out in AI. One of the companies that I had at Abundance 360 this year, Liquid AI, is a brand new platform. We've got a company called Extropic that Gil Verdon is pushing forward. So there's a lot of new technologies coming that will give them a run, or they'll buy them. But then there's a whole push for democratized and decentralized AI. And I think that plus open AI models are going to enable other players to keep going. I sure hope we don't end up in a duopoly worldwide. That would not be good for humanity.
Well, I mean, we could look at it in the phone business and kind of say that we're already there, right? But I understand maybe this is even more powerful than the phone business. Are we the 1996 internet moment when people are just starting to realize that how big it can be, or where are we?
I think we're in probably 94, like AOL has just come online and you got this thing called www.something and email. I don't think AI is going to become embedded in every aspect of our lives. It's going to be our healthcare, our education. It's going to be flying us, driving us. It's going to be the speed of change is what I think people are not really ready for. You know, I had Elon on stage a few months ago, and he's saying we have a 10x increase every 6 months or 100x increase in capability every year. And we've been talking about human level AI, this thing called AGI, whatever it means. And we'll have that in the next year, maybe 2 years. And then what is digital superintelligence? What does it look like when AI is 1,000 or 1,000,000 times more powerful?
Wow. You said AGI. I just thought of adjusted gross income because we just did the taxes. But I guess that's not it, Peter. We have Palmer Luckey on with Morgan Brennan later on in the show. Yeah, and they're doing also a crazy autonomous. I'm just telling you, folks, wait till you see some of the stuff, the videos this company's doing. Is it going to be like 20 people working and the rest of us just living off this? Seriously, where is the room for the human being here, Peter?
That is my greatest concern. By the way, Anduril is an amazing company. It's an AI company, right? Everything else is built on an AI platform, and the most extraordinary companies will be that. The greatest concern that I have is that we humans love challenges and we are purpose-driven. And the question is if AI, and by the way, let's not forget about humanoid robotics, right? This is Tesla Bot, Optimus from Tesla, Figure AI. These are humanoid robots driven by these AI systems to do a lot of our labor. I think human purpose and drive, we're going to have to reinvent how to go higher, how to really think about bigger moonshots. Because if we're sitting back as couch potatoes, that's not good for humanity.
Yeah, sounds nice on paper, but I think people need to have something to do. Otherwise, they find something else to do. And I think you know what I'm talking about in a variety of ways.
I do.
Peter Diamandis, fascinating stuff. Big brain there. We love hearing your views. Welcome back anytime, Peter. Thank you,
buddy. Thank you. It's an exciting world ahead.
Yes, it is. It is scary, but exciting. Kind of like the market today, by the way. Here's how your money ended the day. And that's not indicative, folks. You're just like just tuning into CNBC right now, tuned out the rest of the day. Well, don't do that. But if you are, that's not really indicative of how things did. The Dow ended up down 1%, NASDAQ about 0.6%. But we opened up horribly for everybody but the short sellers. Stocks sold off. At one point, the Dow was down 707 points. And then we had a big turn. Buyers came in. Yeah, we ended lower, but well off our lows. And we'll see if those results that we just talked about, Microsoft and Google, can help us rebound a little more tomorrow. Inside the market, your stud and dud, the big winner, gold miner Newmont, up 12.5%, strong earnings, gold prices at record highs. The big decliner was our top story last night. We prepped you, folks. Meta, down 10%. It was down 18% on our show, so even Meta bounced back. And get a quick check on the futures to see where we might be thinking. Yeah, a little more in the green. In fact, NASDAQ futures up 1%, so we could get a nice rebound pop tomorrow. But we're not done yet, and on deck, Intel shares getting clocked right now. We'll get exclusive comments tonight from the CEO. Plus, the inflation report the Fed and Wall Street have all been waiting for. It's tomorrow morning. We'll tell you what it is and why you care.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Exco, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Let's go, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
All right, welcome back. If you're long Intel stock, I'm sorry, you're not going to like this. Intel investors are losing big right now. The stock has already been slammed this year. This is sort of an intraday chart going back 24 hours. Stock is right now down 7.9%. You could say, try to guess when earnings came out. Yeah, it's right about here. The market did not like the numbers. They did not like the forecast. Now, John Fort just sat down with Intel CEO Pat Gelsinger in a first on CNBC interview and discussed why Intel is promising, I mean, they mean it, the second half of the year will be better.
Overall, our view is that, you know, the story for the last several quarters has clearly been the Gen AI and the accelerator story, you know, largely becoming the consumer of budgets and the focus and power, so on. We're seeing a more normal cycle as we look forward, and we have gotten all of those signals from our partners and channel partners as well. And, you know, so we see some recovery in that business. We saw that in the first quarter already. And for us, our story is also one of an improving product line. And with our Sierra Forest and Granite Rapids, we have a better product that's more power, performance, competitive. So it's also the opportunity to stabilize and regain share as well as part of our unique opportunity.
You can catch John's full interview with Pat Gelsinger tomorrow on Closing Bell Overtime. Starts at 4 p.m. Eastern. I'll be on the 3 o'clock show again tomorrow. All right, time now to take it all to the Telestrator. You know it's a big day when we do that. Okay, so today was really interesting. The markets, Dow down 1%, S&P down 0.5%, NASDAQ down 0.6%. But we told you that wasn't the real story because the markets are well down more. But what was interesting, stocks fell and bond yields went up, which I'm sorry to say probably means that mortgage rates are going to go up. But there is one concern out there, I think, that's growing a little bit, and that is whether or not the vaunted American shopper, all of you, are about to finally crack or slow down. Here's why we say that. All right, if we could go back to the previous chart, guys, that is the 10-year bond yield versus, thank you, versus the RTH, which is a big retail ETF. And something interesting happened right here. That's about April 1st. This is going back about 1 month. Is that right when the 10-year bond yield started to move up? And I know the line doesn't look that severe, but it's a pretty good jump in bond yields. The retail ETF, and there's many others, we picked the RTH because it's one of the more widely held, has gone down 6%. And there's that gap between yields and retail. And you just kind of wonder, all right, is this because as rates go up, not just for mortgages and car loans, but also for things like credit cards? I'll bet many of you out there have seen your credit card rates, your APRs, annual percentage rates, all start to go higher. And I actually ran a sort today, and I noticed that a number of big consumer company stocks, since, again, we go back to really April 1st, when bond yields started to take off, we're starting to see some of these pretty big name consumer stocks go down. Ulta Beauty is down 21%, 22% really, just since April 1st. CarMax, the big used car seller, down 20%, again in like 15 trading days. Walgreens Boots, and we're also seeing other big names, that is Tapestry, the big retailer there, go down. But it's not just all doom and gloom out there. Okay, I don't want to be that guy. So we also found some hidden bright spots. You know that NVIDIA and Supermicro Computer and those names have done great this year. Okay, that's boring. Look at these quietly hot stocks this year. Constellation Energy, up 61%. They make power. NRG Energy, up 40%. They make power. Marathon Petroleum, they make, they don't make it, but petroleum. And GM uses petroleum. Notice a trend? Energy, boring old energy, doing very well so far this year. But remember, everything could change tomorrow. I mean, everything. When the Fed's favorite economic indicator rolls out, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Report, better known as the PCE, basically it measures the total value of all the stuff that we buy. Joining us now is Chair, CEO, and co-founder of Aureus Asset Management, CNBC contributor Kerry Firestone. Kerry, are you worried about the American consumer?
Ryan, nice to see you. Not particularly. And the reason is that the American consumer is employed. The level of unemployment is incredibly low for there to be any thinking of a recession at this point. And wages have come up. So there's a lot of employment. We know that interest rates are high, but not high historically. They're high relative to the last 15 years, and certainly the last several years where interest rates were zero and people have mortgages extending, you know, existing mortgages of 2-3%. But as long as people are working and wages have been going up, which they have been, and they are now keeping up with inflation or maybe higher than inflation in terms of raises, you know, we don't feel that that's going to crumble the economy. In fact, we think that manufacturing, you talked about General Motors, Ford was also a very strong quarter, and there seems to be a bit of an uptick on the manufacturing side. The PMI, you know, production manufacturing index is in positive territory, over 50, which means it's growing. So we feel better in that way. And yes, of course, there's some concern because the consumers have spent so much money since COVID that there could always be some pullback. But we don't think it's imminent and going to be very bad.
Kerry, are you happy with earnings, the quality of earnings so far?
Yes, they've really been very good. I mean, the expectations were for first quarter earnings to be up 3%. And of the companies that have reported, and of course, the tech giants are just starting to report now, even Meta, which was down a lot, had a good quarter. And we have many companies in different areas, United Healthcare, Waste Connection, NextEra, energy company, Visa, American Express, Wabtec, Industrial, all strong earnings. And so we think that the earnings season is progressing pretty well. And of course, Microsoft and Google tonight were fantastic earnings.
We'll leave it on fantastic. Kerry Firestone, you had us at fantastic. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right, on deck. You know what may not be fantastic? A 44% capital gains tax rate. And it could happen. The proposal from the president that's not getting hardly any attention until now.
That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like.
gonna give it to you.
How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it?
Let's go, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.
All right, welcome back. And if you're a wealthy investor, you may want to sit down for this one. It's not getting a lot of attention. But tucked neatly into the proposed federal budget for next year is the possibility of a 44% capital gains rate. It would apply to people and families making over $1 million a year and with investment income above $400,000. If enacted, it would be the highest level ever recorded. It would be done by raising the highest end ordinary tax rate back to 39.6%. Then bump the net investment income tax rate by 1.2%. White House proposal would take combined federal and state capital gains taxes to over 50% in California, New Jersey, New York, Minnesota, and Oregon. Right now, the long-term capital gains top rate's about 20% with an extra 3.8% topped on for wealthy investors. The proposal would take capital gains rates back to the same as ordinary income, 39.6%. It also will realize or tax unrealized gains. And remember, the president has said multiple times that he will let the 2017 tax cuts expire, potentially raising taxes on all income levels. You, and you. In total, the president's budget proposal, if enacted, calls for $4.9 trillion in tax increases for companies and families over the next 10 years. And it would mean that the United States would have some of the highest tax rates in the world, even as we still pay the highest cost for college and health care. Let's talk about it now. Joining us is former North Dakota Senator, U of Chicago, politics director and CBC contributor Heidi Heitkamp, an American Action Forum president and former chief economist of the President's Council of Economic Advisors, Douglas Holtz Eakin. Senator, is there any chance that that proposal, as it's put into the budget, passes?
No, absolutely not. There's no chance that every part of the Trump tax law is going to expire. They're going to extend it or they're going to rework it. And so, you know, the president's budget is not a budget document. It's a political document. He wants to make the point that he is advocating for higher taxes on billionaires. He did that in this document, but there is no chance that that's going to pass. But it's full employment for lobbyists, let me tell you.
Yeah.
People who want to scare people, it's just not going
to
happen.
I want to go back to you, Senator, because this is legislative. So you said, and the president has said, I'm going to let it expire for people making, you know, over 400,000. But it's a rule. It's a piece of legislation. How, can you let parts of it expire and not others? Because the president has said twice and also on Twitter in the last week that he's going to let the whole thing expire and never mention income limits.
Well, let me tell you that so much of what's in there, especially as it relates to the transition from what we call Schedule A itemized deductions to basically standard deductions, has really benefited a lot of lower income people. And then think about the states that Democrats represent. They are states that have been severely disadvantaged from the SALT deduction. And that is going to be a hard push against someone like Chuck Schumer. And so I think you're going to see some negotiation. You're going to see people coming in with, you know, a modified plan, whether it's offsetting some of this with a child tax credit. The negotiations will begin because it is not good politics for Democrats to let the entire tax law expire and not extend.
I just wonder.
And that's why it was done that way, quite frankly.
Yeah.
The corporate tax deductions or tax rates were permanent. These were temporary because no one thought that in the end that this would not get extended or reworked.
The last two tweets, Douglas, for the president never mentioned income limits. It just said, I'm going to let these things expire. We hear a lot about fair share. Listen, federal debts exploded, federal spending exploded, the federal deficits exploded, government's wasting hundreds of billions a year in fraud, waste, and abuse, not my opinion. That's the General Accounting Office, and yet all we talk about is higher taxes, higher taxes. We never talk about fixing the problems. If you just fixed the waste, fraud, and abuse in the government, you could save hundreds of billions a year.
Yes, and you would still have enormous federal deficits facing it. So I want to begin by just agreeing with the senator that This is a political document. And indeed, these proposals are in there precisely because they will not pass the Congress, and they have the luxury of simply using them on the campaign trail. On the substance, first, you do have to deal with the spending side. The threshold decision Congress makes is to spend the money. You then figure out how to pay for it, and it has for years been unwilling to control the spending. The key to spending is not just the waste, fraud, and abuse. It's the large mandatory so-called entitlement programs, and the president and candidate Trump have both taken them off the table. That's a disservice to this country. If you go to the tax policy, this is not great tax policy. What you need to do is do it in the context of the sunsets of 2025 and get a comprehensive plan that supports long-term economic growth. We have terrible growth in the 21st century and allows us to generate the revenue we need to take that part of the fiscal problem off the table, finish the job on the spending side. This isn't the answer to that. This isn't the wealth tax. The unrealized capital gains is taxing wealth. We don't even know if that's constitutional. And we do know from research that I've done with some co-authors that of a dollar of wealth taxes, 60 cents ends up in lower wages for average people. That's not a favor to them.
And
that's a problem.
And many countries in Europe that had a wealth tax have done away with it because they found out that it was more expensive to actually administrate the wealth tax than the money they got in. And that's, I think, Douglas, a key point that I want you to hit on, right? And I get it. People have no sympathy for, and a lot of this is for families with net incomes or net worth more than $100 million. So that's like nobody. And so most people are like, yeah, tax them, not me. But here's the reality. I don't think here's where politicians, and by the way, both parties have done it, be disingenuous. It's like, yeah, if this gets enacted, you're going to raise a little bit of money. But it's like enough money to operate the government for a day or two. That's it. It will have no impact on anything. And yet they say it in speeches like, we're going to solve all of our problems by raising $20 billion a year when the government spends $10 billion a day.
Yeah, you're right. You got it right, Brian. If you indeed decided to simply confiscate all of the wealth of every billionaire in America, you could run the federal government for 9 months. And then what do you do? So none of these proposals to sort of go after high-income individuals are sensible from a long-term perspective. They don't add up budgetarily. They're certainly not good economic policy.
But I think to the senator's excellent first point, they do sound good in a soundbite, right? They sound really good in a soundbite. Heidi Heitkamp, Douglas Holtz-Eakin, guys, thank you very much. All right, coming up, it's more than being lucky. A startup triumphs over the defense industry's biggest names. Morgan Brennan is here in the house with the guy that's putting this all together. Plus, Paramount's deal breaker, a sale of the movie studio may be coming, but there is one major hurdle. Stay with us. That's right. That's a bonus. Tomorrow's News Tonight. And it's all about media and entertainment giant Paramount. The company and David Ellison Skydance are inching closer to a merger. But a key hurdle does loom. With us more now is Alex Sherman, who's been on the story from the very beginning. This is the longest dating period in deal history. Alex, are we finally going to get this done?
I mean, look, the headline is not going to be all that cheered by Paramount shareholders, which is why the stock fell today after my report, which is simply that there is progress and there is momentum toward getting a deal done with Skydance, which is not great for Paramount shareholders on the surface. At least they don't think it is, because they're not getting paid some big premium in a large takeout, which at least some shareholders want. Now, Skydance's argument, if a deal gets done, and frankly, even if it doesn't, is that if you do a deal with Skydance, the combined company will provide upside for shareholders, because this will remain a publicly traded company, and new management from Skydance and the Skydance assets and a deleveraging, a recapitalization of the company with billions of dollars of new equity to pay down debt will make this a more solid company moving forward. The big obstacle that I'm reporting is that there is a renewal deal, a carriage renewal deal with Charter, the second largest U.S. cable company, which is coming. The deadline is April 30th, and Charter just made a lot of waves last year by actually dropping Disney's network in what some called a landmark deal, because it was sort of new terms. Charter got access to Disney Plus to give to its subscribers. It would likely want the same thing with Paramount Plus here, meaning if you're a Charter subscriber, you automatically get Paramount Plus as part of your payment in certain tiers. All of that will play out now in the next week or so. We'll see if Paramount, in fact, gets dropped, goes dark from Charter. And if it does, that actually could play a significant role in the valuation of Paramount moving forward if some or all of its networks are not carried by Charter. So those are the headlines. And no, Brian, we're not done yet. We will continue to get more headlines on this in the days and weeks to come.
Just, we got to go. I'm just waiting for you to mention Tom Cruise because he's like David Ellison's best friend, apparently. It's Top Gun. It's Paramount. Got to be in there somewhere. Alex
We've
Sherman,
got time, Brian.
Just say it, and then the Google clicks will go up. Alex Sherman, thank you. All right, speaking of fighter jets, let's talk defense. Do you like that transition,
I see
Morgan?
What you did there. I appreciate it.
You saw what just happened.
I knew it was coming.
I didn't know it was coming. You just knocked your IFB out, but we're good. All you need to give her a second. We're good. I'm going to read really slowly. Okay, because it's your birthday.
Very slowly.
It's your birthday.
It is.
One major disruptor in the defense industry right now is called Anduril Industries, and its farmer's a guy named Palmer Luckey. Now, Anduril just won a major Air Force contract to develop and test unmanned fighter jets. It's part of the Air Force's Collaborative Combat Aircraft Program. You might have heard her before, Morgan Brennan. She covers all things defense. Her IFB has been retrieved from said ground. She can hear Palmer Luckey, and I will let you take it away. I might pop in toward the end.
All right, Brian, thank you. Palmer, it's great to have you on. Congratulations. This is a milestone for Anduril Industries. It was five, then there were two. Anduril and General Atomics being chosen for this first generation, this first round of these fighter drones to develop them. It's a major milestone for defense tech. It's a major milestone for Anduril. Walk me through it.
Of course, I'm glad to be here, and it's also a big milestone for the U.S. Air Force to be building and developing an autonomous fighter jet for the first time at scale. This is really an incredibly important program, not just for Anduril or for the Air Force, but for our country.
Yeah. And let's walk through, let's talk a little bit about that, because we're increasingly seeing the role of AI in military capabilities. Are we moving fast enough?
I think as a country, we're actually making really good strides and moving fast enough. I mean, when I started Anduril almost 7 years ago, you know, we were focused on AI from the very beginning. If you think about our company's name, Anduril Industries, it's AI for a reason. And now the rest of the world, I think, has caught up with that. They've recognized that AI is going to be an important part, not just of the economy, but also of the way that we deter wars, fight wars, and win wars. And the CCA program is a reflection of that. Building autonomous fighter jets that fight alongside people is a very challenging application of AI. It's one that my company is up to the task. And I think that's one of the reasons that we were selected as a company that's been around for less than 7 years over companies that have a long track record of building fighter jets, not a long track record of building AI, that have been around for over 70 years.
Yeah, and of course, the three companies that were not part of this downselect were Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and Northrop Grumman, to your point about kind of the old guard here. This comes on the heels of you unveiling the Ghost Shark, this extra-large autonomous undersea vehicle just last week in Australia. Autonomy and AI, really the bread and butter and sort of guts of Anduril. How quickly can you scale? What does production look like?
Well, you know, we're scaling a lot of programs, even beyond the ones you just mentioned. Our AI engine that powers all of our hardware products, kind of the AI brain of everything, including Ghost Up on Screen, Ghost Shark, our submarines, and CCA, is an AI brain that we call Lattice. And we're building more and more and more products on top of that. It allows us to move very, very quickly using our own money in most cases so that taxpayers are not bearing the risk and the risk of failure that they typically would in a defense program. In the case of Ghost Shark, we just delivered the first unit a year ahead of schedule and on budget. That's extremely rare for a program doing this type of work, but we look forward to bringing that approach to lots of other programs, including CCA, where I'm confident we're going to deliver on budget and on schedule some really sick AI-powered fighter jets, which, between you and me, it's a dream that I've had since I was 12 years old and watched the 2005 film Stealth, which didn't do very well at the box office. I think we're actually going to make a lot more money building AI-powered fighter jets in real life than that movie made. But it was really inspiring at the time. The techs finally caught up to make it possible.
Well, Palmer, it's Brian. I might have to go back and watch that movie. Never heard of it. It's like Sharknado 6. I mean, sure it exists, but I've just never heard
it. It's not a great movie, but I love it. I'm sure you have films that are the same.
Absolutely. The Right Stuff, The Wizard of Oz, you know, lousy pictures, but did well. Anyway, Palmer, kidding. I want to jump in. At the beginning of the show, I think you'd probably know Peter Diamandis, and we had him on at the top of the program.
Oh, yeah.
And we tell you, all you guys are sort of connected, and we talked about AI, and I said, where's the role for the human being. And we want to keep humans safe. We want our armed forces, men and women, to be safe. My dad, 11 years Navy, go Navy. Where is the role of the human in the Anduril and AI-powered Army, Air Force, Navy of the future?
My view of where the human is doing the things that humans are very good at, which is high-level strategic decision-making, thinking about big-picture analysis of what we should be doing, planning ahead for how we would respond to things. But when it comes to the moment-to-moment micromanagement of thousands or tens of thousands of weapon systems that are operating simultaneously in a contested environment, you cannot rely on people to do everything. There are some tasks that robots are better at. They are, in some cases, faster than us, lower error rates, better error compensation, and more distributed. And most importantly, you can put them into situations you would never put a human pilot or a human sailor into. You can put them into places performing tasks that a person never should have to do because it's too dangerous or too dirty or too, you know, impossible for a person to succeed in that environment. People are not going anywhere when it comes to the DoD. There's always going to be a person on the loop. There's always going to be a person who's managing these systems and taking responsibility for what they do. Mm-hmm. And in the case of CCA, you know, the CCA, the acronym is Collaborative Combat Aircraft. The entire purpose is to have loyal wingmen that are flying alongside manned aircraft. Mm-hmm. And those are the guys that are making the calls. They're the ones that are making the shots. And CCA is what's keeping them safe.
All right. Palmer Luckey, great to have you on.
It's great to be here.
Palmer, thank you. Morgan Brennan, I want to say thank you, too, because, by the way, it's Morgan's birthday. And you came back to the office. Happy birthday.
I sure did.
And I know what you're doing for your birthday tonight. You're going to go home and watch Stealth. Morgan Brennan, thank you. Coming up, where the rich are investing their money now, answers you won't get anywhere else from Michael Sonnenfeld of Tiger 21. Got to take a quick check of futures given what happened today. And look, looks like we're going to have an up Friday, at least for technology. NASDAQ futures up 1%. A little sigh of relief, or maybe a big sigh of relief, after Alphabet and Microsoft posted strong earnings. Both stocks set to open up higher. Alphabet, it's up 12% right now, folks. For Google, that's a giant move. And those two stocks are a big part of tonight's Sully's Stats. Because despite their after-hours gains, the Mag 7 have looked like the Lag 7 recently. Here's why we say that. Based on today's close, the Mag 7 have lost a combined $1.8 trillion in market value since the recent all-time high. Trillion. For context, that's about four Exxon Mobils just in a couple of weeks. Now, that said, some of those names are set to recoup a good chunk or most of their losses tomorrow. I'm looking at you, Alphabet. But is the big bounce back on officially on, he said. That was a lot by the seashore. Our next guest will give you a glimpse of what the ultra-rich think. Joining us now is Michael Sonnenfeld. He is the founder of Tiger 21. Now, more than 1,400 global members. They collectively manage personal assets of more than $160 billion. Honored to speak at your conference. Just fantastic people, by the way.
Thank you.
Always amazed at how many people have gotten super rich on self-storage. Also, I just want to point that out. So, Michael, good to see you again. Get the pulse check. And the thing that shocked me about your conference, we go through this data, is your members, they're not really stock. Stocks aren't their thing.
Yeah, it's now under 19%. That's the first time in many years. Fell down from mid-20s all the way to 19%.
Why is that?
Because our members are entrepreneurs who created businesses, so they're more comfortable with small businesses, private equity. Private equity is at an all-time high, 29%. And real estate, 28% combined, those two are over 50% of their portfolios. When you have the skills to roll up your shirt sleeves and manage something or get involved in it, you want to be able to touch it, feel it, see a problem, work on a problem. When you own stock, you're the last to know of the problem, and it's generally after the stock has dropped.
That's well said. Private equity is interesting because private equity used to be really the realm of the super duper duper rich, the nine digit club, billionaire hedge funds, right? All your members are wealthy, but not all of them are super duper rich. They're not billionaires, right? Has private equity become more democratized over the years?
Absolutely, because private equity is small companies. It's funds in small companies. You don't have to just invest $5 or $10 million in a big fund. When you start a business and that business grows, that's private equity, and that's about a third of the private equity allocation. It's where our members really can have an edge, and they learn from one another in our groups what's hot, and they can work with each other. It's really amazing.
And crypto.
Crypto.
I'm not saying crypto's all the rage, but direct crypto ownership in your latest survey has soared. They love the Bitcoin.
You know, Bitcoin has been the top performing asset in something like 8 of the last 11 years and the number one performing asset. It's still a very small allocation, but unlike gold, we used to have gold bugs. We have Bitcoin owners, many, many, many. And I think about 38% of our members actually own Bitcoin or other cryptocurrency. That's a huge, huge number.
Yeah, it really is. You're looking at the survey here, net buyer, no change there, but they have a lot of buyers. And the last thing, we talked earlier about this tax proposal. Senator Heidi Heitkamp said it'll never happen. But talk to us also, and there's a lot of our viewers are wealthy, a lot of your members are probably watching and listening right now, about the importance of good investing in good tax strategy. How key is that?
Well, obviously, if you invest in two assets and one is going to produce a long-term capital gain and the other is going to produce income, everything else the same. You want the long-term capital gain. And that's why I invest in businesses and real estate, because you're taxed at a much lower rate. We'll see whether this proposal goes through. I think it's probably dead on arrival. But we do need to balance our budget. And whether you get all the way to 44%, I think taxes are going up.
Yeah, Senator Heitkamp said it was more of just a political move, probably right. But still, invest in a good tax planning firm, I would imagine, is on your list. Yeah. Michael Sonnefeld, always love having you on. Fascinating to see what the most successful among us are doing. Tiger 21, thank you. All right, Michael, thank you. All right, coming up, is Tesla's rough run finally in the rearview mirror? China may have a thing to say about that. Sawyer Merritt is with us next. All right, Tesla shares continue to go up after Elon Musk reaffirmed the company's commitment to new affordable models and a robo-taxi and a humanoid robot. But of course, even with this week's gain, Tesla still lost about a third of its value this year. And billionaire investor Ron Barron, one of the biggest bulls on Tesla for years, was on Squawk Box, and he really called a bottom for the stock.
It's going to go up huge.
When?
And now. I mean, now is the bottom.
There you go. Couldn't be more clear than that. Joining us now, though, to talk about the car and the company is Tesla watcher Sawyer Merritt. Sawyer, good to have you on. We've talked about many people in the past, not just yourself, but others, about full self-driving and how cool it is. It's not all there 100% yet, but it's getting there. And could Tesla, the company, do a better job, maybe even like TV ads, I know it's old school, of selling the public on exactly what this is, yes or no?
Yeah, I think they could. Tesla owners are currently now driving roughly 15 million miles on average per day using FSD, which is roughly a 250% increase just from 3 months ago. So that's roughly 1 billion miles every 68 days. And it took Tesla around 3.5 years to hit its first billion miles. And on top of that, Tesla's compute capacity is, you know, going to increase, I think, roughly 500% this year. And to me, how can any other automaker catch up to Tesla in terms of data gathering when they have a fleet of millions of vehicles already gathering billions of miles of data?
Well, and Tesla drivers, to your point, they're the proselytizers, right? They're the ones out there preaching to the masses. You got to try, even to other Tesla owners, try the FSD, or to non-Tesla owners. But there's only so much that they can do. I mean, they're going to touch one or two people at a time.
I think at the end of the day, butts and seats help sell Teslas. And I think the same can be said about FSD. It's something you really need to try in person to really understand the experience. It's one thing to see videos online, but it's a whole nother experience in person. So I think people just got to try it.
I was schlepping up the West Side Highway from the NYC to here today. And the guy next to me, we're in bumper to bumper traffic, was on his phone in a Tesla, no hands on the wheel because the car was driving itself. And I have to say, I got a little jealous because I was both hands on the wheel. By the way, quickly, Beijing Auto Show going on right now. How worried, if at all, are you about all these cheap Chinese companies that may come in here, Sawyer?
Yeah, you know, China is the most competitive EV market right now, but Tesla and BYD are really the only automakers making money on EVs. And, you know, despite all the cheaper EVs launching, I suspect we'll see some consolidation in the market, which would help Tesla. And BYD has also shared that they have no short-term plans to enter the American market. So Tesla really doesn't have to worry about that too much. Tesla's brand is still really strong in China. and I suspect they'll do well in the years to come.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens with BYD, to your point. Sawyer Merritt, always love having you on. Great stuff online and everywhere else. Appreciate you joining us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, folks, before we go, let's get a quick check on futures if we can. I normally don't like to do it. They're kind of thinly traded at this hour, but given what happened today, we got to go out a little green on the screen. And all futures, they are higher, indicating it could be a nice Friday. We're not going to show you. You got to trust me, folks. We'll see you tomorrow. Shark Tank is next.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Exco, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Let's go, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.